that occasionally I say, just I guess hear myself talk. I'm not sure why I say it, any other reason. But it's this, it's a cruel world out there. Anybody ever heard me say that? Okay. Occasionally I'll say that just to be funny or to start a conversation or whatever. And that little saying has been kind of part of my life for 40-something years. And it goes back to when I was 13 or 14 years old and worked with my dad. My dad was a carpenter, a builder, and I worked with him. And he had another guy about his age that worked for him. And this guy was one of those men that kids just liked. You know of people like that. Seem like kids are just drawn to certain guys. And he was one of those type guys. I liked working with him. Anytime we were on the job, usually me and him were together, and my dad was kind of keeping us busy, and he always had something going, always, cutting up and doing something, to entertain me, I guess, was what he ended up doing. I'm not sure if that was his purpose, but this is one of his sayings. He'd come to work, and he would say, "Man, it's a cruel world out there," and, we'd all laugh. And that I had that in my head and in my mind ever since then, and I'm kind of carrying it on for him. He's been dead for 10 or 15, 20 years now. But that might be sort of the gist of what chapter 14 in Job is about. And we're going to read the chapter. And as we read the chapter, I want you to be thinking of this sentence, because after we read the chapter, you're going to help me fill in the blank. You see the sentence there, the second line, Job is really what? All right? And we're going to try to fill that in with one word that we conclude from chapter 14. So keep that in mind. Job is really blank. And let's try to fill it in after we read the text. So, Job chapter 14, we'll begin reading in verse 1. There's a couple of verses in this chapter that are familiar. You have heard them before, I'm sure. And it's always enjoyable for me to see the context of verses that seem like I've heard all my life. And we'll be looking at that as well. Verse 1, "Man who is born of woman is short-lived and full of turmoil. Like a flower, he comes forth and withers. He also flees like a shadow and does not remain. Thou also dost open thine eyes on him and bring him into judgment with thyself. Who can make the clean out of the unclean? No one. Since his days are determined, the number of his months is with thee, and his limits thou hast set so that he cannot pass. Turn thy gaze from him that he may rest until he fulfills his day like a hired man. For there is hope for a tree when it is cut down that it will sprout again, and its shoots will not fail. Though its roots grow old in the ground and its stump dies in the dry soil, at the scent of water it will flourish and put forth sprigs like a plant. But man dies and lies prostrate. Man expires, and where is he? As water evaporates from the sea and a river becomes parched and dried up, so man lies down and does not rise until the heavens be no more. He will not wake nor be aroused out of his sleep. Oh, that thou wouldest hide me in Sheol, that thou wouldest conceal me until thy wrath returns to thee, that thou wouldest set a limit for me and remember me. If a man dies, will he live again? All the days of my struggle I will wait until my change comes. Thou wilt call, and I will answer thee. Thou wilt long for the work of thy hands, for now thou dost number my steps. Thou dost not observe my sin. My transgression is sealed up in a bag, and thou dost wrap up my iniquity. But the falling mountain crumbles away, and the rock moves from its place. Water wears away stones. Its torrents wash away the dust of the earth. For thou dost destroy man's hope. Thou dost forever overpower him, and he departs. Thou dost change his appearance and send him away. His sons achieve honor, but he does not know it. Or they become insignificant, but he does not perceive it. But his body pains him, and he mourns only for himself. Okay, so there's the chapter. How would you fill in the blank? Job is really despondent. Okay, I've got four words wrote down here that I thought about. Despondent wasn't one of them, but it's a good one. That's not one of those words that's at the forefront of my vocabulary. Despondent. Job is really despondent. Pessimist? That was one of mine. Pessimistic. Somebody else? What? Confused. Christy, what did you say? Hopeless. All right. Depressed. That was one of my words. Cynical. That's a good one. Somebody said something. I didn't hear it. Suicidal. I believe he is. Any others? All right. A lot of those are on the same line. They're all very well true and good words, it seems like. Some of them coming from a different angle than others, but good words. We have this saying that the difference between a pessimist and an optimist, you've heard this, I know, that the optimist sees the glass as half full, the pessimist sees the glass half empty. I think Job just sees it empty. Seems like there's nothing there to encourage him. Last week, John talked about hanging on to hope, and we're kind of continue that theme a little bit this week. I'm going to give you four statements from this chapter that it seems like that Job mentions, that he brings out, and we'll talk about them. The first one is this: life is short, but still too long. Life is short, but still too long. See, in verse 1, Job says, man who is born of woman is short-lived and full of turmoil. His days are short, but full of trouble. Notice Job qualifies what type of man experiences that life. What type of man? Man that is born of woman, right? Who would that include? Everybody, all of them. All men. All men, they're born of woman, their days are short-lived, and their life is full of turmoil. And he gives two analogies. The first one is a flower. Like a flower, he comes forth and withers. All right? It seems like in Job's mind there's no intermediate step between a flower coming forth and the flower withers. The flower comes forth and withers. And we know that, don't we? The flower, when it comes on the vast majority of plants, is only there for a short period of time. All right, Susan and I were talking a week or two ago, Doris Bell's field down here that has, what's those yellow flowers called?
Bitterweed.
Last year it was just, covered. Just nothing but yellow. In fact, they had a picture of it in the Sun Times. And two or three weeks ago, I looked out there and there was nothing there. And I thought, did I miss it? You know, did they have the flowers come and gone? But they hadn't got there yet. They're now. They're there. I'm not sure that it's totally at its peak, but there's a lot of them there. But you come back in a couple of weeks and see what it looks like. The flower comes and it goes. Its lifespan for its glorious beauty, for its glory, is but a short period of time. He also compares it to a shadow. Flees like a shadow, he says. Saying that the shadow flees. The shadow flees. Think of you. And you're outside, and your body makes a shadow. If you were to stand in that one spot and watch your shadow, you would see it, of course, be long and get short and lengthen the other direction as the sun rises and sets, and then it's over. Years ago, I remember when I was in college, I was taking a surveying course, and one of the things in this particular course that we did to learn how to establish bearings was use the sun. And we would take the transit and look at it from the wrong end at the sun. If you look at it the correct end, it would burn your eyes. If you look at it in the other end, it seemed to shade it. And you could put the crosshairs right on the sun. I mean, it was pretty cool looking. You look up in there and you put the crosshairs right in that sun, get it right in the center. So we did that. And then the instructor, you know, is talking to us and telling us, you know, here's what we're going to do, and here's, you know, how this works, and this type time. And you have, you know, back then you had tables that you had to look up to do all the calculations with and stuff. And that took maybe 5 or 10 minutes or so past. And he said, now look at it again. And you look at it again, and it's not in the center anymore. I can remember thinking, did somebody hit that transit and knock it off? But no, the sun had moved. Now, we would have not noticed that with our shadow. But in that precise way of looking at it, you could see that it moved. And he said, you know, actually, these type of things only work in a certain period of the day. I think it's like from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock because the sun is less noticeable moving in the middle of the day than it is on each end of the day. And you have to get your work done and get it done quickly. You know, the longer time it takes to do this, the more error you're going to have. And it gives us that idea that the sun, or that which is called the shadow, is moving. Things are going. Things are moving. And Job says that's what your life is. Your life is like a shadow. It is there and it is gone. You would think that something that short we would hold dear, don't you? You would think it would be precious to us, since it's going to be our possession for so short a period of time. But that's not Job's experience. That's not what Job is saying. He says, God, our lives are short, they are full of trouble, and here is our interaction with you. You open your eyes on this man whose life is short and full of trouble. You bring him into judgment. The small amount of time he has left, he has to face you in judgment. His days are numbered. You have numbered his days. You know his beginning. You know his end. You have set limits that he cannot pass. You set bounds upon him. There are only certain things you allow him to do. He can do this and no more. He says, Lord, turn your gaze from him. And the gaze would be a gaze of judgment, it seems like. Turn your gaze from him and just let him relax. Let him rest. Until, and this last phrase is interesting, he fulfills his duty, fulfills his day like a hired man. Now, there's something about a hired man, and I know everyone is not this way. I don't mean to place all hired hands in the same boat. But to some extent, hired help, the stereotype of the hired help, the difference between the hired help and the employer, is the hired help is waiting on what? Friday or 5 o'clock, the end. Right? Job says, this is man. His days are short, they are full of trouble, and all he can see is, when will it ever end? Life for, in Job's perspective at this point, life for man is not sweet. Life for man is not something that he holds on to with enjoyment. It is something that he endures until it ends, no matter how short it is. He says, life is short, but I can't wait for it to be over. I don't know if that's a pessimist. I don't know if he's despondent. I don't know if he's depressed, but it, all those things fit, don't they? That's the first thing that Job mentions. Then number two, when man is cut down, it's over. When man is cut down, it's over. Notice what he says in verse 7. Notice he gets on the idea of hope again. For there is hope for a tree when it is cut down, that it will sprout again, and its shoots will not fail. Though its roots grow old in the ground and its stump dies in the dry soil, at the scent of water it will flourish and put forth sprigs like a plant. Now there's a description of a tree. Or it could be any plant, but he gives us a tree. He says you cut it down, you end its life, but it's not over. Because in that stump, there's still life. I've got some pictures I want to show you that are interesting. Kylie, put that first one up there. Can you tell what this is? It's a log. It's a log that's sitting at my house, close to my sawmill. This is a walnut log, a black walnut log, that I cut down about 8 months ago. 8 months ago. It's been laying in my yard, and this spring, it puts forth a shoot out of a log. How is that? Where is the life? It's not coming from the ground, is it? It has to be coming, for my limited knowledge, from the moisture in that log. Okay, look at the next one. Here's the same, this is a different log. You see it's got another sprout over there, a different sprout from a walnut log. One more. Now, this is an empress tree. Anybody know what an empress tree is? All right. Harrison does, because me and him talked about empress trees. Okay, I think the technical name is Polonia. It has a big leaf. I mean, they say the leaves get 3 foot across. I've never seen one that big, but I've seen them this big. They're fast-growing trees. The fastest-growing tree, I think they say, in America, it came from China. The wood is real lightweight. It has big leaves. If you see any leaves, purple flowers on leaves, purple flowers come out first, and then these gigantic leaves. I cut one of those down about a month ago. Here is a small log laying on the concrete under a shed. And you see the leaves sprouting on it. Some of those leaves are as big as my hand that have come from a cut down log just that big around. Tells you the desire, and this is just speaking and personifying this log, I guess you would say, but the desire of this log to live. It's down, it's cut down, it's laying on concrete. There's no source of life seemingly at all. And yet it wants to live. There is something there that is encouraging that tree to go through its natural process to produce life. That's what Job is saying. Cut down a tree. That doesn't mean it's gone. He says, but man is not like that. Job says in verse 10, but man dies. When you cut man down, when man dies, it's over. When man dies, he lies prostrate. Man expires, and where is he? It doesn't sound to me like Job has a lot of hope in this life or after he dies. Now, I know we have looked at verses, and we'll look at more in the book of Job where it seems like Job has hope for a resurrection, for Job has hope for an eternity, but it seems to me like also Job is flip-flopping. Job is struggling with his knowledge about God. And here he seems to be on the downhill side. He says, as waters, verse 11, evaporate from the sea, and the river becomes parched and dries up, so man lies down and does not rise. Till the heavens be no more, he will not awake or be aroused out of his sleep. It seems like Job is at the point in his suffering, at the point in his despair, that he does not expect to pull out. He does not expect to endure. He does not expect to ever recover from the situation that he's in. He has no hope. Number three on your outline. Why do I even dare to have hope? Why do I even dare to have hope? Verses 13 to 19. It seems like these verses, Job gives us a hypothetical situation that the way things could be, the way things might be, but we will see later on he stops short of investing himself in that hope. Let's read those verses again. Verses 13, oh, that you would hide me in Sheol. Oh, God, that you would cover me up in the grave. That you would put me in the ground, cover me up. That's what I wish you would do. That you would conceal me until your wrath returns to you. That you would set a limit for me and remember me. So here he's backing up a little bit. And he's saying, God, that you would set a bound, set some limits. And I think the idea here is that I could see that there were limits on my suffering. Oh, if I could just see some light at the end of the tunnel. That you would remember me. You would set these bounds and that somehow, God, you would remember me. He says in verse 15, you will call and I will answer you. You will long for the work of your hands. He's desiring that God would remember that he was the creator and that he created me. Surely, God, you didn't create me just to tear me apart. Oh, that God, that you would remember your creation. Notice what he says in verse 14. This is a familiar verse. It's a question. If a man dies, will he live again? Now, we have heard that, or I have heard that, all my life. And my answer to that question is yes. But I have to tell you, I don't think that's the answer Job is expecting. Job is asking a rhetorical question. And the answer he's expecting you to give is no. If a man dies, will he live again? What hope do I have of that? Seems to be what Job is saying. Job addresses God and says, God, if you would cover me up, if you would hide my sin, put them all in a bag and seal them up, let there be bounds to your judgment against me. But, verse 18, he gives all this hypothetical hope in verses 13 to 17. But notice what he says in verse 18. But the falling mountain crumbles away, and rock moves from its place. Water wears away stones. Its torrents wash away the dust of the earth. In like manner, those were my words, you do destroy man's hope. Says God, I could wish, I could hope, I could desire, I can imagine that you would remember me. But in the end, you destroy man's hope just like the flood waters wash things away. Just like the crumbling mountain falls in its place. It's hard not to think about the waters washing away and not think about just recently, last weekend, when the hard rains came and so many places were flooded. I was thinking about, not necessarily floods, but part of that. But all of my adult life, you know, I've dickered in this and dickered in that, just learning about stuff and trying to do something different, you know, just do stuff. But one thing I always thought I never could be, never had a desire to be, was a farmer. I could not bear, I don't think, to have a field full of crops and have 3 foot of water standing on top of them like we might have seen in the past week. That would just not make my day. I would be so despondent. I'd be just like Job. All right? You can walk, you can go around the county, just the roads. You know, the road out of our place. You know, here's this low water bridge that gets washed out, you know, once every year or two. And just, you washes out and you fix it. And it washes out and you fix it. And you wash it out and you put a bigger culvert in. And a year, two or three years go by this time and it washes out. I mean, it's just over and over and over. Nature and life tears things up. A number of years ago, we had some grapes. I was going to be a grape farmer. Had 125 Venus grapevines. And they're, you know, always look for stuff that's supposed to be easy, you know, you don't have to do much to take care of it. And had 125 plants. And they were seedless, and, you know, kind of a new, at the time, kind of a new hybrid. And so here I had them. And I wasn't wanting to spray them, you know, I wasn't wanting to put chemicals on them all the time. You know, I just didn't want to do that, but I'd have to. And first year had that they produced, I had, I don't know, I ended up getting, I think it was like 1,000 pounds of grapes off of these vines. And then the next year, and they had warned me, you got to spray them for black rot. You got to spray them. Well, I didn't want to spray them. Didn't want to put fungicide on them. And so I'd watch them. And I found out through the hard way, if you wait until you can see black rot, it's over. I've looked at my grapevines and seen, I mean, a tiny black dot. A tiny black dot. Small as the little smallest dot that you can make with a pencil. And it's too late. The next day or two at the most, that whole grape is gone. I lost heart. I didn't want to mess with them. Those grapevines sat there for 2 or 3 years. And one of the high points of my life was pulling them up and getting them out of there where I didn't have to look at them. I'm about that way with blueberries now. All right. Yeah. But I've seen people. I've seen people who were so beaten down, so beaten down that their permanent demeanor was one of a crude way of saying a whipped dog. Their shoulders droop, their feet drag and scuff when they walk. They are so whipped down by something in life. They can never get ahead. It seems like they take one step forward and two steps backward. It might be a relations in their family. It may be just financial stuff. I don't know what it is. It may be people taking advantage of them. You know, there could be a thousand things, a thousand scenarios. But it has happened so much and so often that they have totally, it looks like from watching them, that they have totally lost hope. And they won't, it seems like they will never recover. They will never get it back. It seems like Job is almost there. Job is vacillating. He's almost where he looks that way. Number four, the pain of living prevents you from investing in and enjoying those you love the most. The pain of living prevents you from investing yourself in and enjoying those you love the most. Notice what he says in verse 20. You do forever empower him, or you overwhelm men, and the man departs. You change his appearance, and you send him away. And notice what it says in verse 21. His sons achieve honor, and he does not know it. That's the good thing, it seems like, that this man's sons happened to them. And for some reason, he doesn't know it. His sons achieve honor. They make something of themselves, or whatever the case may be. They're successful. And the man doesn't know it. Or they become insignificant. Or they come to nothing. The opposite extreme. And he's not aware of it. He does not perceive it. Because, verse 22 is why, his body pains him. And he mourns only for himself. Job is presenting a picture here that I don't know that I ever thought of this, but I have seen it. I never thought of it till I read this and was thinking on this text. But someone's personal life can be so painful that the things they ordinarily, and he uses sons, that has to do with your family. You want to be involved in your family's life. You want to joy with them, to celebrate with them in their successes. You want to help them in their hard times. And Job says the pain that he's experiencing is so great that, and he's not talking, he's obviously applying it to himself, but he's talking about man in general. This man who is full of trouble, his days are short and full of trouble. This man that God has turned against. This man. His son, his family, they experience celebration. They experience success. And he is not able to enjoy it with them. He's not able to celebrate with them. He's not able to have that relationship where they spend that success together because of the pain that it takes for him just to live. His family goes through hard times, times where he ordinarily would pick them up, or times where he ordinarily would help them, but he can't do it. He's not even aware of their circumstances because the pain of just existing is too great. I can remember now that I have read Job's words. Looking back on my dad's life, the last 4 or 5 years that he lived, he wore a pain patch on his back just to cope with the pain. My mother changed it. I don't know how often you change the pain patches. The pain patches are potent things. They are extremely strong. Some of you remember the incident locally of a young man who licked one and it killed him. And you know, I can look back at my dad's latter years, and I was working and he was retired from building. And years ago, he would come by the job occasionally, just see what we were doing, just look around, just come by. And gradually, those trips got less frequent. In the last year or so that he lived, I can look back now and see that his interest in my work was zero. His interest in my family was almost zero. And it's not because that was my dad. It's not because he didn't care. It's because life was so unbearable. When you are hurting, it's hard to think of someone else's troubles. It's hard to worry about someone else's problems when your own physical pain is so great. It's hard to get happy and cheerful about someone else's successes and someone else's benefits when your pain is so great you can only think you're self-absorbed in your pain. I've never been there. I've had some excruciating pain, but it's been from short windows of time. Short windows of time. That's where Job's at. Job is telling us some things I never thought about. Job is sharing with us some feelings that I never considered. Job is hurting. We finished the first round. Job's three friends have talked. Job has responded. Job has answered. Next week, we start round two. Eliphaz takes the floor again and speaks. Read ahead. Let's see what he says. Let's pray. Father, help us, God, to look at life correctly. God, help us to trust you. God, give us that love for you, that desire for you, that our own nature would never do on its own. God, help us. Some of us, even right now, are experiencing pain or experiencing heartache. God, it's hard to know how to handle that. God, sometimes we think we just have to cut it off to be able to survive, to withdraw from everyone, everything. God, help us to trust you. God, help us to love you. Help us to worship you. God, whatever the circumstances of our life may be, God, bring honor to yourself. Exalt your holy name, Lord God, through our lives. Amen.